Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We said at high noon we would catch up with Ramona Shelburne. She is on the line, covers the NBA for ESPN. Ramona, how you doing?
Good, how are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. I just want to say this. One, we've had to go through a lot of crap in 2020. It can get on down the road as much as I'm concerned. It all started with Kobe Bryant. I just wanted to say that. Thought you did a tremendous job of helping with ESPN's coverage of that. You were all over the place, and you had great stories. So just a hat tip to you on the Kobe Bryant coverage from your end.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, he was, you know, that was my dude, right?
So, still hard to believe, you know, Ramona, you know?
It's almost like it didn't happen, to be honest. Like, you just kind of like, that was so crazy that actually happened, like your mind still can't wrap your head around it. You know what I mean? Like you can't process it. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
What? Wait, Kobe died? What? You know? And, you know, I feel like I've been watching so much with him that it's like he's still here. You know what I mean? Like you see all these games and all these interviews and, you know, that's what's nice when you're a legend, even though he had way too short of a life. Like, he left behind so much that we get to watch and enjoy and see all over again, you know? I mean, it's between, you know, him being in the Jordan doc and all the classic Laker games they've been playing on ESPN or interviews he's done, like, you still hear a lot from him.
He gave already to us so much, and it's still hard to believe how much more he would have given, you know, for the rest of his life. He had so much more to give. You brought up The Last Dance documentary. What did you make of the 10 episodes?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was really good for all of us, right? Didn't you guys enjoy it?
Like,
I
no did. Doubt.
It was like fun. You know, I like to, like, right now, I'm in this place where, like, I don't really watch too much cable news anymore. I don't really watch, like, I have to, like, focus on my son. He's a toddler. He's like 20 months old, right? I mean, I just chase him around all day, right? And then, and my job. And between that, like, I'm busy. Like, if I get too much into watching the news, I'll just get depressed, you know? So it's been so nice to, like, have sort of escapist shows, you know? Like, I'll watch, you know, Top Chef or something, or I'll watch The Last Dance. And it was, I mean, like when you watch The Last Dance, it was like December. It was like sports, right? I mean, it was we started relitigating all these issues that were big in 1998. Like, you know, why did the Bulls have to break up? And, you know, what was Dennis Rodman? How Phil coached Dennis Rodman? I mean, there was just so many things from that documentary that, like, were just great storylines. I mean, I was into it because I knew Phil really well from coaching the Lakers out here in LA. I knew, but, you know, some of the guys on that team, obviously I knew Steve Kerr and Jed Bushler and Bill Wennington, Cartwright, like all those guys have gone on and coached in the NBA, whether it's assistant coach or head coach. And it was like, it was just great to watch it. Plus, you know, Jordan is this guy that I feel like people forgot about a little bit. Like, he was obviously, he's still regarded as the greatest of all time, but, like, you forgot who he was and all the different complexities of his personality, and this just, like, big deep dive into it. And I mean, I'll tell you my takeaways from it, which was you know, I look at it as I'm always fascinated by how people are great. Like, what makes them great? How do they stay on top? How do they continue to push themselves? How do they continue to refine their craft when everybody's coming from them? And I noticed that, you know, Phil, Michael, Rodman, all these guys, like, they were so intense that they would burn out, right? Like, they would just, you know, Phil retired and unretired twice. Michael retired, unretired twice. Rodman ran off to Vegas or Atlantic City, like a lot of it is just that the intensity that you need to maintain the level they're at, it just requires them to either escape from it sometimes or to have escapist type activities, whether it's playing golf or gambling or whatever it is. But, you know, I'm always fascinated with that personality type.
Two of the three of us lived the Jordan era. I mean, we were young adults, but we lived it. But the fun part was we thought we knew all the stories, right? Or we knew most of the stories, and we learned things. It's another thing for you. You cover the sport. You're in NBA circles. You talk to people. You've probably heard all the stuff. But I have to believe you probably – did you learn anything? Was there anything you went, huh, that's interesting. Like, we learned things. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess – like for me, I guess it was in high school and college for the Jordan year, so I wasn't working. And I think I understood why they were breaking up. Like, I mean, it was the telling of the story is the narrative arc of like, okay, they were getting old and Jerry Krause wanted to break them up before they got too old. I mean, I think that was the same arc, right? That came through then as it did now. But I don't think I realized on any of the details of like why Krause wanted to break them up, and covering it now from a from this perspective, I look at all the different ways that it would have been handled differently. And that, like, all you would have done with the championship team like that, you would have just given Pippen like an extension, a short one, probably like 2 years, where you kind of overpay him, and that way you keep the team together until they lose. But you also are able to trade him because it's that kind of a trade asset, you know. And I'm used to the NBA now where there's no such thing as, like, the team's too expensive. Like, people don't break their teams up right now because they cost too much. They certainly don't break championship teams up. And that's because there is a luxury tax. There's a salary cap and a luxury tax. Back then, there wasn't. And also, the revenues are completely different, you know. So the Bulls were... you know, I think their total salaries that year was $61 million, and the salary cap was $29 million. So they were, I mean, you know, more than double what the salary cap was. And frankly, like Michael's salary alone was more than what the salary cap was, right? He was over $33 million that year. So they made a lot of money, and it was so much, like, breaking that up was like an acceptable thing to do back then. You know, because it was so expensive to keep them together. People, if you tried that now, like if the Warriors would have said, oh, we got to choose between KD, Clay, and Draymond, people would have got upset, you know, like, oh, you're making all this money, you're winning championships, you got to spend, you know? I mean, that's like kind of the new standard for championship organizations. So it doesn't age well, right? Like why they had to break it up. It didn't age well. And that, I guess that's what I learned, because at the time, I think I just kind of took it at face value. Yeah, they were getting old. It cost too much to keep them together. Okay.
We're talking with Ramona Shelburne from ESPN. She covers the NBA. And Ramona, we don't have an NBA team here, but it's so fun for us to follow. Of course, we get more into it as the playoffs go on. But we know that the NBA, number one, has some elite superstars that have massive followings on social media, massive presence nationally, and they're already, I think, at the forefront when it comes to sports teams on how to express themselves socially with issues that are going on right now. How do you see this going to the next level? Because it seems like that's what the collective thought is. They want to take this to the next level to try to be a positive force here.
You mean with regard to like what's going on in the country right now with protests and everything?
Exactly.
Or just in general. Okay. You know, I think that it's been interesting because I think everybody has, there's been a few guys who have really been out who were part of the protest, you know, Jaylen Brown, Malcolm Brogdon, those guys. There have been a couple of, you know, I think the Lonzo Ball and his brothers were out, right? It was LaMelo and LiAngelo, right? I think there's been a few. I haven't seen the, like, some superstars. Trae Young was there the other day. Trae Young was out in Oklahoma. But one thing I think is interesting is that I've seen a lot on social media, but I haven't seen necessarily as much guys out in the streets protesting and, you know, walking and speaking and that kind of language, you know, like giving their voice at the actual rally, right? Giving their voice as people are marching. I've seen some of it, not you know, but I think, and I don't know what that is that, you know, hey, there's still a pandemic going on, and, but, you know, going outside with thousands of people is not exactly the safest thing to do right now. Like, I think it's that. But I also think there is, everybody is, I don't want to say conflicted, but everybody's kind of, there's a difference between going out to protest and being seen as condoning looting, right? And some of the other stuff that's happening. And I think we're all kind of wrestling with that. Like, you know, where's that line of like, you're allowed to protest, but then how do you process, you know, breaking into stores and stealing shoes, you know, and iPads and whatever people are taking, right? So you see a lot more on social media with people trying to help, with people talking, and rather than necessarily like, you know, getting into the rally like Jaylen Brown has. And I think, you know, Jaylen Brown's done a really good job of like being part of the rally, being articulate on social media about why people are protesting, what they're protesting, what he's trying to accomplish. And then, you know, making sure that there's a line drawn between that and the violence and looting that's been happening more at night, you know. But I live in Los Angeles, guys, so, I mean, it's hard for me to watch my city like this, right? You feel the pain that people have, but then I see, you know, I was just watching the news during the day, and it's, you know, everybody's breaking into the Van store, you know, in the middle of the day in Santa Monica. And you're like, okay, what do those shoes have to do with, you know, why you're protesting? Like, you know, there's a conflated message, you know? And I think that's why everybody's kind of being cautious in what they say, like making sure they're supportive of the protesters, but also not condoning the violence.
I've heard a lot of people standing up and say, you know, the next step to make the real change is, you know, mobilizing people and organizing people to, you know, register to vote, all of the things that can really move everything forward. It would seem like that's got to be an initiative. If, you know, if the players could all come together and help that cause, that would seem to be really constructive at this time.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen many players get political, right? I haven't seen, and I don't mean just in their views, but in supporting any one candidate. We saw LeBron do that in 2016. LeBron campaigned for Hillary Clinton, if you remember. He was out in Ohio, and he went to rallies, and he campaigned for her. I'm trying to think of any, Magic Johnson has, for several different candidates over the years. I haven't seen as much of that, of like, you know, where does this go next? I think people, I definitely think you will see a lot of players talk about registering to vote and get out the vote. I'll be curious to see if they endorse any candidate, though, or whether it's presidential or at the state level or anything like that. Because those are all different thresholds. Like, they're all different levels that you have to cross. So I wonder how far you'll see guys go. And also, I know this can sound weird, but it's everybody's in such a limbo right now. Whether, you know, I think we're going to get a vote on Thursday. I think we're going to have a plan to bring the NBA back. But there's still 6 weeks to go between whenever we get a, you know, that approved, but I think it's going to be Thursday, but could stretch into Friday, I guess. And playing, I mean, they have to go through training camps. They have to all be tested constantly. Like, what are we going to do if there's an outbreak of players that, you know, on one team, or staffers on one team? Like, there's still just like a long road between approving a plan and actually playing again. And so I think everybody is just kind of in this state of like, we just got to put one foot in front of the other and like focus on that, staying safe, stay healthy. Like, that's one thing I keep trying to remind everyone right now, is like, you know, COVID-19 didn't go away. You know, it's still out there. And just because our attention went to something else, it doesn't mean you can be any less safe. So I think players are wrestling with, honestly, what all of us are, right, in our own daily lives.
Ramona Shelburne from ESPN is here with us on 102.5 The Game. So, as you mentioned, the vote coming Thursday, hopefully more of a plan in place. Does it feel like 22 games that's where the, or 22 teams, I should say, that's where this is going to be?
I think so. It would have to be like a real change, because the reasoning on 22 games is pretty well thought out. You know, it's okay. Every level that you get to is a little bit more unsafe, right? 15 is the safest because there's the fewest amount of people. 20, I thought it was going to be 20 for a while just because, you know, in the Eastern Conference, there's only really one team that's within six games, and that's the Washington Wizards, and nobody really sees them as a playoff team. And but, you know, okay, there are four teams in the Western Conference that are within five games, right? So it's that made a lot of sense. But then people thought, well, that's kind of weird to only have four extra teams, and what about in the Eastern Conference? How do you make those games meaningful? You know, there's got to be something at stake rather than just seeding. So 22 was like this number that people arrived at where it's about two-thirds of the league, not quite, you know, 23 would be, but the regular season games would theoretically be meaningful. And I think that enough, but it's also not so many that you have too many people in the bubble, right? So 30 teams felt like too many people. But I, there is this sort of last stand of the 30-team option that's taking place right now, just because nobody really wants to go 9 months without seeing their team play. They would lose that revenue. They kind of out of sight, out of mind. You know, there's that idea of you know, if you're not playing and people aren't talking about you, they're talking about somebody else, right? Whether your team's in the playoff race or not. So there's still some talk about could we do 30 teams or what else could we do? Just to keep those eight other teams engaged. But I think it's kind of like Goldilocks, right? Too hot, too cold, you know, just right. Like, I think it's too few, too much, just about right. That's what I think the last conversations are this week.
A lot of what we've talked about here, obviously being an NHL market, is, you know, how much are you willing to rob Peter to pay Paul to finish this season, but, you know, affect mm-hmm. next season. So what kind of conversations are taking place within the NBA? Because I also feel like the NHL and the NBA, you can put them kind of in the same category because they seem to work so well together. But what kind of conversations have taken place of, yeah, we want to get this finished, whether it's finished the regular season, then playoffs or going to playoffs, but we also don't want to affect next season as much at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody has a problem with starting next season in December. If anything, I think people want to do that just because the fear of next season, and I'll tell you this is in all sports, not just basketball, is of the second wave, if there's a second wave in the fall. And everybody is, you know, bracing for that. I mean, there could be a second wave this summer, and, you know, who knows, right? But I think people are definitely bracing for a second wave. And, you know, if you have your season starting the normal time, which is, you know, October, November for the NBA, you're right in the thick of that. And the idea that, you know, you'd be able to find a way for fans to go, that's kind of out of the question. The whole extra season without fans is really hard. And I think that with if you start in December, you may not have fans right away. You may, you know, but there's a better chance starting later just because, like, the idea that we could have a vaccine or we could have other treatments, you've just, you know, you bought yourself some time. So maybe it may not be in December, but it could be in March, right? And theoretically, the season would be extended next year, too. There could be other ways that you deal with it, too. You could have just like a more condensed, compact schedule where you don't have as many off days. You could still finish around the same timeline as you usually do. But people are really concerned about next season, not just, you know, second wave of it, but going an entire season without fans. That really does affect the bottom line.
Ramona, thanks for the visit. Good luck chasing the 20-month around. 20-month-year-old around.
Oh, my God, I'm about to go do it right now.
Yeah.
I'm taking my child care shift. My husband and I trade off every 2 hours, so I was supposed to start at 10:15, and he's like texting me, "You almost done?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll be right there."
We've been there.
You get the signal. Yeah,
we've been there.
We've had that signal. Yeah,
we know where you are right now.
Run around. And he's gonna
scream, and I'm going to say, no, please don't open the refrigerator door and take out, you know, the glass bottle. It's going to be that. Just start coming right up.
Well, you and the family continue to be safe, and thanks for the visit today.
You too, guys. Thanks.
All right, that is Ramona Shelburne. She covers the NBA for ESPN. A lot to digest there. We'll come back and discuss on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, the game. Well, just like Caleb Joseph yesterday, Toronto Blue Jays catcher, and now Ramona Shelburne, who covers the NBA, very optimistic about their sports returning. In fact, Ramona Shelburne took it a step further. What? Going to maybe have some real news by the end of the week? Is that what I heard correctly? Or do I need to clean out my ears?
That's been the sentiment all week, is that they're going to vote later this week on the return to play, which is, I think, if I'm interpreting correctly, similar to the NHL, in that we've got our format, we've got our game plan, but there's still things that we've got to work out with the player safety and all that stuff. The intriguing thing about the Orlando model is you're – in a position at that resort, and Darren, you've been down there. Chase, have you ever been? You ever stayed down there in Orlando to go to Disney or anything?
Yeah.
You ever do that?
Oh yeah.
You have this massive campus, if you will, to where you might have the ability to have what a lot of people have asked, like what about my family? You know, okay, we're going to play 2 months. Can I see my family, or you know, can they be with me? There might be some more options there with everybody on campus, if you will.
Yeah, I've actually been to the Wide World of Sports, so I know. Yeah, I know that campus that you're talking about and they're talking about. So I could totally see that working.
Which was I thought what the MLS was looking to do, and so I don't know. Yeah. I have not honestly, and I should be paying more attention. I just haven't seen as much come jump in front of me of what their plan is, but I thought I had heard that they wanted to play down there.
Yeah, the baseball complex is actually where the Braves used to have spring training until just this past year. They built their own Cool Ray Field, I think is what it's called, but they built their own complex. But they were at the Wide World of Sports for a long time.
So what has MLS done? I'm just throwing this out there, but what happened to their plan of Orlando?
Hang on, I had just had that right in front of me, of their plan. So, and just to kind of lead into this, you know, they're saying if there is an agreement, they're going to lock the players out. So that's part of the negative. But as for Orlando, I'm trying to pull that up because we had talked about that early on, and I'll try and get that information for you in a second, Willie.
Yeah, I just you know, maybe we should have somebody on from the organization. There doesn't seem like there's just been a lot of talk about it. It's because quietly they're in the same position as the baseball players, right? In terms of the players for MLS, and it's even more pressing for them because they don't have, you know, a cross section of players who have made a ton of money over a long period. The salaries just aren't as high in that, and they don't have a big TV contract, so even if they play, it's not like they're going to recapture a ton of revenue from their games, right? That's a big challenge, right, as to how can you financially make it work playing the games. You want to play, that's a given, but their equation is a little different in terms of the TV money.
Well, they're like minor league baseball, right?
It's Major League Soccer, but there is a similarity to minor league. I mean, they have some TV money.
Well, minor league baseball teams, those are pro athletes, but, you know.
Right, but I'm saying minor league baseball has no TV money. MLS has some TV money. It's not as much. And so you have no fans, which is a huge part of the financial formula.
Well, that's what I was getting at. They both, that's why I was, you know, trying to compare the two. They both depend so much on their fans, the attendance.
But what happens if, and I did find this, and that's where they do a lot of their training. Their off-season training is in Orlando. I don't know if it's the same complex that we're talking about with the NBA, but the Players Association approved a proposal a couple days ago that would pave the way of returning in Orlando. But as we know, there are different issues that remain between the players and the league itself. So,
because that's where Nashville SC went before they started their first game against Atlanta here in Nissan Stadium, right? They were down in Orlando training.
They do a lot of – I mean, they have a similar plan of spring training. Like, they do a lot of camps down in that area because, so you know, there are so many that are in cold weather cities, and so as they're training, they do it in a warmer climate. So it basically it's kind of like baseball in spring training in either Florida or Arizona. But I do wonder, too, as we talk about the finances of this and fans, you know, how much these, especially the baseball or soccer, which are outdoors predominantly, how much they would pay attention to, you know, if NASCAR brought fans back or,
right.
Or even, you know, I haven't seen anything on the UFC, but watch some of these other sports, like, okay, if they bring them back, you know, could we do that? And as we hear things of college football or the NFL having some fans in the stands, could that change things?
But there is something to the outdoor sports. I mean, you can't throw UFC in there because those are indoors. Right. But the outdoor sports, there is definitely an element that's to push it in a positive direction, you know, where you could tinker with getting fans back in the stands.
A percentage of fans, no question. Like, okay, let's take this. I had this argument presented to me just – you know, and just watching a lot of discussions from people that I think are worth listening to. And this was something I hadn't even thought of. If we can fly, like we've all seen pictures of planes, right? People are flying, right? They may not be flying as frequently as they did before.
Well,
this.
They're not, but yes, the flights have not stopped.
Right. But we've seen pictures of flights where, you know, we know what it's like on a plane. It's not, there's not a lot of extra space. And if you've, you know, I don't think they've been restricted to 50% capacity. Am I right? I mean, I've seen some.
I don't know
flights.
If they've been restricted, but I know that for most of the airlines, people I've talked to who have been flying through this, it hasn't. You know, you didn't have to worry about that because they weren't even close. I mean, I've talked to
you've
some
had
people.
Room.
Oh, room. You had you had your own section. I mean, it just, you know, and I'm not talking about going to, you know, off the beaten path places. I'm talking about on big planes going from one big market to another big market, and they're telling me, you know, it's not even half full. So I, you know, but I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody, Willie, to your initial point that's
okay.
been
well,
on a
well,
full
this
plane.
Is, this is
like
what
a,
I'm getting
a sold out.
I haven't
plane.
Either, but I have seen pictures of planes with everybody wearing a mask, but it's pretty full. It's not, may not be totally full. But my point is you're hard pressed to get on a plane and not feel like you're pretty close to somebody, right? So if you can fly the plane, what is safer on
the
plane?
For hours, by the way. For hours.
For hours. Are you safer on a plane, or are you safer sitting in a ballpark in the middle of the summer in the open air if there's spacing? I'm not talking about a crowd of 40,000 in a 40,000 seat sold out stadium. I'm talking about a crowd of, I don't know, pick a number, 10 or 15,000.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to think if you can fly, then you should be able to reasonably do a certain amount of people in the stands. That was the argument that was being made on TV. It made me think.
I've brought
especially
up
while
the
weather's warm. It might be different in December
show.
Or January, you know?
I've brought it up many times on this show. The airports have not closed down, so people are flying every day.
Right, so it's like it's a constantly evolving thought as we kind of reemerge here, where we had to start by saying, okay, let's stop everything for a minute here. We got to stop. Let's hold on, stop the spread, and now as we start moving forward here, these are all great questions.
Well,
right? We've been talking about the whole our experience, Darren, with the tournaments, with return to play. And I know, I hope a lot of people are following, you know, just our stories. And I would love for people to continue to share their stories, whether it be soccer or softball or baseball, like we've been talking about, or anything else that's going on this summer, because these are all things that have to be discussed. And we're trying to find that right level of risk versus activity.
Yep.
I'd be curious.
And economics, right? I mean, let's be honest. The
sure.
economics are a big part of it.
Course.
I'll also be curious, and this is separate, but at the same time, it's a part of the conversation. A lot of people have been together lately because of what's been going on in our country. So, are we going to see a spike in cases?
That's a question.
I mean, did you see the pictures downtown during the day on Saturday?
But to this to tie that into this conversation, I mean, that is a data point that you can look at of, you know, would putting a bunch of people back together in a stadium, you know, what happened when a bunch of people were together downtown, in close proximity? And you would obviously want to spread people out further in a stadium, but I do think it's a study that can be made and a data point to use.
Well, if you're smart about it, it's like we had Todd Rotermel on yesterday talking about hotels, right? There is an extreme incentive for any hotel to create an environment that people feel safe and coming in, right? You're coming in to stay in our house. We're a hotel. We've got to make you feel safe. If you don't, then nobody's going to come. We could be open all day, but if nobody thinks we can, you know, service you and put you in, you know, you don't feel good about the risk, then it's all for naught anyway, right? So if you're a baseball team or a soccer team in these next few months that wants to, you got to be working extremely hard on your system of how you get people in and out of the ballpark and how many people can you safely get in there and stay safe. You got to work towards that. And it's complicated, right? Because you can't control everybody. Once you get a certain amount of people, you know, it just takes some people coming in there that are symptom free, but they have the virus. And then, you know, that's a problem. Well, that's what you have to try to work through.
Anybody out there listening that's been on a full flight or close to it, I'd love to know, because the people, the conversations I've had are people that have not been on full flights or not even close. They've been pretty empty flights. I haven't talked to anybody who's been on a really full flight where you're going, ooh, you know, is anybody out there listening that has? And if so, what was it like? By the way, do you have to wear a mask? The airlines, are they
I'm not sure.
enforcing that? Like, I can't imagine
I'm pretty sure the
why it's okay to get on a can and shut the door and everybody go up together for a couple of hours and you can't and you don't have to have a mask on. But I don't know that. I would just be curious. Are people actually getting on planes without a mask? I don't know. I have not flown. We canceled our flight at the end of the month.
I don't know if you can force somebody to wear the mask. I think the workers, the flight attendants, all of that crew, I think is wearing masks.
What do you mean you can't? We just talked about Costco. They just told their members, you will wear a mask or you don't come into our store.
I am curious about that. That's a really good question. What is the policy? It may differ from airline to airline, right?
Sure.
Is it up to the airline individually to say, on this flight, we require you've got to wear a mask? I don't know.
I'd love to know if anybody's been on a somewhat or close to or full flight during all of this. And what was it like? Did you have to wear a mask? Were people wearing a mask? I don't know, because we have not flown, and none of us have talked to anybody who has been on one that has been full. So I'd be curious to know if anybody has. 737-1025, 615-737-1025. You can call or text us your story. By the way, we spoke about South Carolina earlier, who told us that we cannot speak to an assistant coach, especially on radio, because radio is the work of the devil, according to South Carolina. Frank Martin, their basketball coach, their fine basketball coach, has tested positive for coronavirus. I don't know if you guys saw that. I just saw that here in the last couple of minutes.
I did see that. Sad news, but, you know, hopefully he will be all right. But I did just see that come across my timeline.
All right, we will do this. We'll step away, and we will have Rashawn Evans, Titans linebacker, in the final hour. But we'll come back and wrap up the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. I guess somebody has sent in their story on a text, 615-737-1025. Have you been on a somewhat full or full flight during all of this? What was that flight like? Did you have to wear a mask? Did you wear a mask? I would be very curious to know. What did the text say?
Yeah, and they didn't identify themselves, but They said, I went on a flight with Southwest a week ago, and it was set up where the first six rows were closed, as well as every middle seat. Other than that, it was full. They made me wear a mask to get on, but once you were on board, you were allowed to take it off. The flight attendants only came by once to collect any trash brought onto the plane. You could not get any food or drink on the plane itself. It felt safe. They sanitized the entire plane with spray between flights, and everyone was very respectful of personal space when boarding and leaving.
So I guess this is a Southwest thing, because I got a caller that said Southwest had 18 people on a flight, and if you didn't have a mask, they gave you a mask. So basically making it kind of mandatory to where you wear a mask on there. So I guess that's like a Southwest thing.
So they flew to D.C. from here, and there were 18 people on the flight?
Yes.
Yeah, those are basically the stories I've been getting. I just recently talked to my father-in-law who went from Texas to Atlanta. Big airport. That's a pretty, right? And this was on Delta, though. But, you know, those are always full flights. He said he was on a 355-passenger plane. He said there were 25 people on there.
Jake from Clarksville, 6 weeks ago, my wife was not required to wear a mask on an American Airlines flight to Cleveland. Most people were wearing masks and using alcohol wipes all over their chairs. 3 weeks ago, she traveled to Tampa Bay with Southwest and was required to wear a mask. However, she wasn't told until boarding the flight. Middle seats were closed. Both flights were about 25 to 35% full.
Yeah, that's basically what I've been. So, Willie, I don't know what full flights you – I have not seen that or talked to anybody.
Is it because people just aren't flying, or are they limiting the numbers that they are allowing on each flight?
Good question.
I think it could be a combination of the two.
It could be a combination of both, yeah. I don't know.
Because I know before I finally canceled my –
because they're still encouraging people not to fly unless you – it's essential, right?
Right.
That's still where the mindset sort of is in the CDC and all that.
I know before I canceled my flights to L.A., they kept changing them. Like I would get emails other day of, well, your itinerary is changing. And so I think it's because they were canceling some flights, they were moving people around, and they were limiting the number of people to be on a plane. So the consistent message that I've gotten from people that have had to fly has been there just hadn't been a lot of people.
I just think it's probably when you have a 355 passenger plane, that's a huge plane, and there's only 25 people on. I don't think it's because Delta said we're only going to let 25 people on. I just don't think people.
Okay, but I guess where we started this is the question is still somewhat the same that I addressed at the beginning. Let's say that by and large a plane is 25% full. Is that a higher risk than a stadium that's 25% full? If you can do one, is it reasonable that you could do the other if you're taking the right measures when you're in there?
I've brought this up many times throughout the course of 2.5 months of we're still flying on planes. I've said it probably 10 times. And now we're having, it's the same conversation I've brought up for 2.5 months of we can't do this, but we can get on planes. What's changed? Nothing. I think we know our answer. I don't know. Maybe a medical expert or somebody smarter could give us a different answer, but how could the answer be a flight? I don't know how that could be. But it can't be all that bad since they've not shut down the airports and people have been flying through this whole thing.
I don't pretend to know. I don't know because I know there are obviously things that happen when, you know, you close a plane and to the pressure and all that, but I have no idea if that affects anything. So I would love to know if somebody does know the answer of why it's considered to be safe to be on a plane, because I'm with you, Darren. I figured that would have been one of the first things to shut down completely. But
well, some people's travel is essential, right?
Yeah.
So if you have to get somewhere.
Well, there's a lot of things that have been essential, right? But that we've shut it down. I mean, that didn't change anything. There's a lot of things that we've needed to do, and we just didn't do it.
But now we're in June now. Like, we've been going through this for a couple months. It's in the whole evolving and trying to move steps forward. I'm reading an article from NPR from a week or two ago. Here's a policy from United Airlines. Beginning next week until the end of June, it will aim to inform passengers 24 hours before departure if their flight will be more than 70% full. So I guess there's a possibility that it could be more than 70% full. And customers can opt to rebook on a different flight or receive a travel credit if they're not comfortable flying under those circumstances.
Got another text. I flew Nashville to Tampa on Southwest, required to keep mask on unless eating the snack bag. All middle rows empty, maybe half full in total. Connecting flight from Tampa had 48 people. They were spacing us out to equalize the weight. Flight back to Nashville wasn't even half full. Met at each stop by a large group of people waiting to board and clean after we left.
Yeah. So it sounds like the theme is no middle seats. Well, that makes a ton of sense. And not serving anything on the flight, which makes a ton of sense. I get that.
Yeah.
But I would still lean toward, I think, really it's more about people just haven't been comfortable flying. You know?
Yeah, well, and they've worked from home, but although, stayed home, you know. Yeah, I think.
But I still ask the essential question. If you can do it, we know you're allowed to do it. If you choose to fly, you can fly. And then you determine, you know, are you willing to take that risk? Is it reasonable to then start thinking about a soccer stadium or a football stadium or a baseball stadium being a percentage full, right? If you can do one and it's inside, it's cramped, all of the things that, you know, Barry Trotz years ago used to talk about the plane as a germ capsule, right?
It's a germ capsule. I hope we don't change that moving forward, no matter once we get past this or not. I hope that I've said it several times through all this. I hope during the wintertime they force us to wear masks on planes. All these people hacking and coughing and they're sick and getting on flights. Maybe we'll change our mentality during, you know, the cold seasons when we get on planes. Moving forward. I hope that changes.
But how does that risk compare to an open stadium that hopefully is taking strong measures to keep people separated? So I feel like there's definitely a pathway here to having a certain amount of people in the stadium. Now that baseball stadium might say, well, that's nice and all, but if we have to staff that stadium and everything, are we really coming out ahead? Are we bringing in enough revenue to really make it worth it if it's only this percentage? What percentage makes it worthwhile?
That's a good point.
But I think, you know, in the whole name of trying to get back and live with the virus and get people moving, get people used to the new habits we've got to get to anyway. Let's start somewhere. Let's try to take those steps up the stairway.
I don't know why.
And be smart about it.
I said it from the beginning. I said NASCAR should be the first one back, and they pretty much were. And NASCAR should be the first one to be putting fans in stands. I mean, they've got these big, huge tracks, and they can safely place people, you know, social distancing. They can. They have the ability to do it. And it's outdoors. I mean, I think they should. I think that's where it's headed. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's coming real soon on their end. I don't know what the magic number is. I don't know what the percentage is. But I think we're sitting here laying it all out. If you can do this, why can't you do that? If you can do this, why can't you do that? You know, to me, arenas and planes and everything, that's different. Outdoors, you know, I don't know why NASCAR probably isn't, especially when you're hearing a lot of other people. I mean, football is certainly flirting with the notion, without a doubt. In fact, I think their signs are pointing towards that's what they're going to do.
Oh, I don't think they're flirting. They're
going to
do it figure out they just can't do it.
Yep.
Well, their goal is to do it.
I agree.
I think with NASCAR, they're waiting on the okay. I mean, they can't just make the decision and say, hey, we're going to put fans back at the racetrack. The cities and states in which those tracks operate have to be okay with it too. And NASCAR has done a good job of working with those folks about trying to get back to the track itself. So that's part of the reason. But it does appear that they would be close to doing it, and you've heard the drivers have all been saying it. We got to get the fans back here in some capacity when it's safe, and that's been the consistent message of when it's safe, and just like, you know, returning to play with other sports. But my guess is you're going to see it. They'll be the first to do it and see how it goes, and then, you know, baseball could look at it, football could look at it. Okay, well, it's worked for NASCAR, because, I mean, some of these facilities, it'd be very easy to spread people out and just, you know.
Easily.
I mean, very easy, and that's even with, you know, some of the tracks that have reduced capacity. I mean, it's still, they have a lot of room that they could move people around. So, and Talladega is one of the tracks that was mentioned of potentially allowing fans. Homestead, Miami, the other one. They don't have the backstretch at Talladega anymore. May it rest in peace, but they could put them, you know, with all the seating that they have on the front, so they could figure it out.
I think that's where it's all headed. I do. What did I just see here? It was you just referenced the viewership on FS1. It was the highest for Bristol. It was the highest one they've had for a cup race on FS1 since 2017.
That's Sonoma. Yeah, I just saw that too. The most watched event on the channel since the 19 ALCS on FS1. So it everything that, you know, you've said, I've said, that we have said on this show about NASCAR and the opportunity to take some momentum, I mean, it's paid off. And that's even through not only, you know, trying to get races rescheduled, but they've had to deal with rain. I mean, they've had to fight the weather on it too, and it's, you know, it's worked. It hasn't hurt them. I haven't seen last night. Last night was an Xfinity race, but I watched that, and the race itself was entertaining from Bristol, but you had Kyle and Kurt Busch in the booth that added to it. They were calling the race and were hilarious, so they are taking advantage of this opportunity for sure.
Other sports could too, but they're going to have to agree on some things.
Yep.
And get back.
And that is the difference. There's not a union. There's not a driver's association,
yep,
to deal
it's
with.
Very true. Yep.
So it's one sanctioning body that they consulted the drivers on it, and they've had, I don't know if they have it anymore, but they've had the driver's council. But you know, that definitely changes things, that there's not a union that they have to deal with.
Good point. So in our conversation with Ramona Shelburne to start the hour, it does seem like what all signs are pointing towards a 22-team playoff. Is that what I heard?
Well, it's
from
not.
Her?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily even a playoff. It's 20. You know, they could do a similar to the NHL, do a play-in type tournament. I mean, there are a lot of different scenarios that have been thrown around with that. But yeah, that's the general consensus. There's been talk of bringing every team back and finishing the season. There's been 20, 22, but it seems like 22 is the most logistical one that seems to be on the table right now.
Well, I know the smaller market teams have definitely been, you know, asking the league to include everybody in their restart. I know that.
Yes, they have. But everything that I have read, and that's why I brought it up with Ramona, was people seem to like the 22-team idea the most at this point in the season. I think too, that it's the same conversation that we had about the NHL. I mean, at what point is it too much? At what point are you robbing Peter to pay Paul? I mean, if you bring every team back to finish the regular season, I mean, what's that? I mean, can you start in December? Or is it going to be even longer? I mean,
well, listening to Ramona Shelburne, and it's interesting. We keep saying that we can hear, you know, what's going to stick long term, what's going to come out of this, and be. I'll tell you what, I do wonder. NHL, NBA. I wonder who says, you know what, if one of them is going to go, or both of them are like, you know, starting this thing later is maybe the better way to go. Maybe they like that better. I don't know. I mean, look, they'll never admit this. They'll never say this, but we all know, you know, who the big bad wolf is in the fall, right? We just, until December, well, you know, really until the Super Bowl. But, I mean, you are competing with the big bad wolf, and it affects eyeballs on your product. I mean, we've talked about that with college basketball. I mean, their biggest hurdle right now is nobody's really paying attention until, you know, they're well into their season. They have to create things just to get people to pay attention to them. Well, if you're basically starting up towards the end of their regular season, you're just kind of starting up and you're not in month three of your regular season. I don't know. I mean, the summer does provide a lot of these sports to get much, much more eyeballs and attention on their sport if they go later rather than starting earlier and finishing earlier. True?
Yeah.
I don't know how you could think anything else. No, I don't think how going to July or even August would be a horrible thing for those sports. It would be August, going to August and starting in December or September, whatever the time frame would be. Maybe Labor Day weekend, it all wraps up.
I think there's a lot of sports that have the opportunity to rethink their model in a lot of ways. College baseball, there's been a lot of discussion of something that has been tossed out there many times before, but it's never had enough momentum to really get going, and that is to push the season, push the college baseball season more into the summer.
Yep.
Right, to get more eyeballs on, more focus, and for the weather, for the northern cities.
I was going to say, let the weather cooperate. Yes.
That would be the number one thing that would benefit college baseball, is that those schools would have a real chance. And when you couple that with the fact that we might not have the lower levels of the minor leagues, there might be a lot more players that need a place to play and would love to play and take the advantage of, you know, playing summer, more of a summer schedule in, you know, I'll pick a Vermont, Montana, Chicago, Seattle, you know, places where, you know, their college baseball programs are at a huge disadvantage when you go to their Boston, you know.
The best
players in Boston
for them
or Chicago are coming south.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming to Vanderbilt. They're going to North Carolina. They're going to Florida, you know, if they have a chance. You know, at least most of them are. But if the season were played more in the warm months, those programs might have a chance to really build something fun to where some of the best players from the area might think twice before they go to one of the southern teams.
If they started 2 months later, think about how much that would help them weather-wise.
Right.
The difference that would make.
And how much of the spotlight you would have media-wise. You know, instead of half your season in the wake, you know, in competing with the NCAA basketball tournament.
Yep.
You know, key games being played in March when March Madness is going on. You're not getting a lot of spotlight on college baseball during that month. You would if everything was back a month.
Rashawn Evans is going to get pushed 30 minutes later. I think maybe they had a meeting or something, so it'll be about 1:30 when we talk to him. We'll come back. Fourth and final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.